So today's the Vanguard Academy board meeting for Thursday, December 1st, 2022. It's 6:30 p.m. So we'll go ahead and open with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll go ahead and do the roll call, and we'll start with Joy, and then just go around the table this way.
Joy Palmer, board clerk.
Ben Robinson, board member.
Dan Jessup, board member.
Kim Mangum, board member.
Brad Nelson, board member.
John Holmes, business.
Michael Clark, interim co-director.
Darren Jenkins, casting services.
Darren Jenkins, board member.
Debbie Wallen, board member.
Grace Mitchell, board treasurer.
Charles Reynolds, the director.
And Eric Freeman, board chair. Okay, the first item is public comments. I don't see any on the list. Do we have any public comments? No public comments. We'll move on to the next item, which is items of excellence. So if anyone has any items of excellence that they want to share, staff members.
I'll share one. Staff this week was faced with a pretty big disaster, flood, and I was really impressed to see how quickly staff was able to get together and mobilize and come up with a plan to get students back to school as quickly as possible. Really amazing, and the students attended school today and yesterday like with no hiccup, like there was no issue, and it was really impressive to see how quickly they were able to overcome that unfortunate problem. Yeah.
Yeah, so good job to our staff here. That's impressive. Any others to share?
I might mention we saw quite a bit of progress over the last month with the students and their the grades in the teacher's class. In the classes, the teachers helping the students bring the grades up. Those percentages come up from what has been previously reviewed by some of the committees. And it's actually looking really good for this semester.
Very good.
I'd like to add on our counseling side, we've had a greater awareness of college preparation, and had quite a few students completing their college applications already, trying to in the past February 1st deadline, but the December 1st deadline, which is today. So I'm looking really hard to get into that.
Good. Okay. If there's no more, then we'll move on to the minutes from the previous meeting, and those should be just behind the agenda in your packet. So we'll give you a few minutes to review those minutes. So we'll add Scott Kingston to the attendance. So as soon as everyone's had a chance to review them, we'll entertain a motion to approve these minutes.
Second.
So we had a motion from Darren Jenkins to approve the minutes from November 15th and a second from Kim Mangum. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. So the voting's unanimous. The minutes from November 15th are approved. Next on the agenda is our director's report, so we'll turn it over to Charles for that.
Because of reviewing the finances and the original budget that was approved last spring, we found that it was necessary to revise our budget. And so we do have a revised budget. I know that John explain a little bit about what's in the budget and what the revisions are.
Do we want to move to that now? We've got that on the next on the agenda, but if you don't have any other items, we
I thought you said final.
Oh, sorry, director's report.
As far as the director's report, main thing we have to report on is the flood that occurred last Saturday. We had one of our toilet freshwater valves, the pipe broke and flooded a portion of the school, which caused significant damage to three of our classes, affected two others somewhat, and affected some of our restrooms and our boiler room and our electrical control room. We did get it shut off, and the owner and landlord has hired ServPro, a contractor, to come out and do the remediation and get things taken care of so they don't get mold and get everything dried out. That process is ongoing right now. We have been have relocated the classes that were in those classrooms to other classrooms during vacant periods. Some of them are actually using the cafeteria and the new space that hasn't been remodeled yet. Continuing instruction. We did lose the school learning day on Monday. By Tuesday, we were able to line things up to have a distance learning day. I want to thank our co-director, Michael Clark, for being able to contact the State Charter Board and clarify that we would be able to do that. Yesterday, we were able to bring about half the students back in school and half of them learning online. And then today, we were able to bring the full student body back. As Michael mentioned, they want to commend the staff and everyone involved. I know Joy put a lot of work and effort into trying to plan things out. Others helping her. That we were able to get the kids back into class as fast as we did. So, I think that's the main thing that we have to report, other than, as I mentioned, that I guess just a reminder, we do have our Christmas concert coming up on December 19th. It'll be in the evening, 6:30 p.m. At the Libby Gardner Hall up at the University of Utah. And we'd like to invite all of the board members to attend and get a chance to see our music department in action. I think it's going to be a very impressive performance.
Sorry to backtrack, but on that water damage, is that all covered through insurance or the landlord, or is that going to be an expense for us?
We do have an insurance policy. Both the landlord has insurance in place and we have insurance. The landlord believes that their insurance will cover all the damage, and that's the route that they're going right now. It's the landlord overseeing hiring contracts for remediation.
Good.
And then one thing I might mention, that one of the results of the lost day, it is affecting our calendar slightly. So in our January meeting, we probably have some proposed adjustments to the calendar that will happen at the majority of it will be at the end of the year. Just being able to make up the lost day. Make sure we still meet all of our requirements. That's everything I have as far as the director's report. Anybody have any questions?
Okay. If that's it, we'll move on to the Finance Committee, the revised budget, and we'll turn that over to John.
So we were able to reformat our presentation for the budget for that. So it was more helpful for everybody. So on the first page, I have a summary, kind of the higher overview of it. And then behind that is a more detailed account of it. So we can look through and see the original budget, the changes, and then the forecasted budget, so what we're looking at currently, and then how you use it. Right now, with the forecast, we're looking at a positive income of $118,000 for the year.
One of the things I might mention for the benefit of those that were on the Finance Committee that reviewed the previous one, one of the big changes that significant impact of this is after our November 30th reports being filed and the state updating our funding for the school, the state's actual funding. So we got the mid-year update. The mid-year update actually increased our income significantly. That information just became available to us today.
Good timing.
Quick question. In what account are the reserves being held? Are they just in the checking account, bank account, savings account?
Yeah. Where's that? Guy that just went bankrupt?
Yeah. Got it went out of town. I might suggest looking into what's called the PTIF, which is the State Treasurer's Investment Fund. It gets a much higher rate of return than any kind of savings or checking account. Usually, sometimes it's worse, but it's typically better on an overall basis. And the other thing is, it's completely liquid. With a online transfer, you can have it in your bank within a few hours. So it's approved by the money market, or the money, there's a council, whatever it is, that oversees all of this, any public and municipal funds. So it's called the PTIF, and it's through the State Treasurer's Office. But, you know, having that kind of money in a checking account isn't a good idea.
Yeah, I like this new format.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
That's true. That represents a lot of work, and that's a great job.
Any more questions or discussion on the budget? This is a voting item, so we'll need to vote to approve the modified budget. So if there's not more discussion, then we can entertain a motion to approve the budget.
I make a motion to approve the budget as proposed.
Okay.
I second that motion.
So we have a motion from Brad and a second from Grace to approve. All in favor of approving the budget as proposed, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Okay, so the voting is unanimous. This modified budget is approved. The next item is the GPS software RFP. And right, so this one we discussed quite a bit last meeting, but we didn't vote on it because we were waiting for this budget to be modified. And so, do we have the packets here? Are they?
They should
get passed out.
Packets.
Okay.
Near the bottom. I think it was the last thing that got went around. It looks like this. Yep.
What we packed out is the summary of the RFP. We have the full RFP here. We had three different vendors respond. My understanding, vendor number two, we do have some board members that may be conflicted with the Modern IT Solutions. And the owner is Jeremy Andrews. Nobody has a conflict.
Okay. Who'd you say it was?
Jeremy Andrews. I just realized where the conflict was. Our purchasing secretary, Amber Stoll, was the one that had the conflict.
And so,
Vendor number two. And so once she found her to be a bidder, then the whole process was turned over to Joan Jenkins to go through the process rather than Amber being involved in the role.
And
John has conflict as well. I believe he is a cousin to both.
So it's vendor number two.
Vendor number two, yes.
And there's no other conflicts with the other vendors.
That's correct. There is good detail. There's no other conflicts there.
as you can see from the bid summary, vendor one and vendor two were really close to each other. Vendor number three was a little over $50,000 higher. The challenge that in reviewing the whole packet, the challenge that we ran into with bidder number one is they actually failed in their review meeting the minimum mandatory requirements for their bid. And this contains the bids if you can look, if anyone wants to look through it and analyze it. And so for that reason, we are recommending the vendor number two, Modern IT Solutions. We'll actually pull the detail on that. The reasons that it appeared that Cint LLC was not able to.
So they just didn't answer the questions that said these are some of the requirements for this bid, and they didn't say whether they could meet those or not.
That's correct. One of the requirements in the RFP was that they would certify Vanguard Academy would have creative control and ownership over all the private identifiable information for all the students and all the users in the software being developed. And in their RFP, they said that no, they would maintain.
Did they answer no, or did they, or they just didn't answer?
They're not showing ownership, but I didn't even notice this. Their co-founder and CEO listed here. I have a conflict with.
So does it even go through the evaluation process?
Were you part of the evaluation process?
I think I was.
You're listed on, you are listed on here.
Yeah,
it was blind.
I think at this point I might make a recommendation that.
Is that the first one that you were said you were the second company?
Vendor That's one. First. Vendor one.
So vendor one, you're conflicted with vendor two.
Vendor two.
So maybe we should have Charles
and Grim. I had never even heard of this company before. I don't know who they are. And I read through the doing the evaluation. But I didn't even go back and look very closely.
At relative? What's the conflict?
Yeah. It's my nephew. My nephew is the, like I said, I don't know if he's an actual owner.
The picture's right there on the front of
the CEO, the picture's right there. And
wait
when
a minute.
I saw him, I thought, wait a minute, what's this?
Yeah.
In biology, Jesse Spencer.
Where's my nephew? That's a funny coincidence.
I had no idea he was going to work for this company.
Now, it's just so I understand the process, right? It was blind.
So
you didn't know the name of the company,
name
of anyone involved.
Right.
And then I had just seen this other than through it.
And that was the first company, right?
That's that first company.
Yeah, they didn't score well anyway, right?
Well, the question and the criteria is that they didn't answer that one question. That there would be nothing wrong with asking them to clarify. I mean, if somebody leaves out numbers or wrong numbers or something like that, then yeah, you don't sit there and coach them. But when someone leaves out an answer, there's nothing wrong with going back to them and say, hey, on your RFP, you didn't answer this question. What's the answer to your question, to this question?
And if I remember right, I was one of the evaluators also. They didn't answer any of, there were like a list of five or six requirements. They didn't answer any of those questions.
Maybe
one question I should ask, just for the board, will it be for me to step out and let you guys continue to discuss? Or do you want us to step back and redo that? Maybe I'll step out and let you guys decide on that.
And this one is? So this one has a grant that covers the.
Yes. So the full amount. The full amount is already covered.
So it's already in the budget.
Yep.
So then how do we handle that? Where we had two other evaluators.
So one of the.
One evaluation.
So one of the evaluators is conflicted. You have two evaluators that were not with any of the companies.
But it, I, from an appearance standpoint, it's tough that out of three vendors, two of them have conflicts. Mm-hmm. You know, are there, and the RFP was responded to by just these three? Were there more? Were anybody solicited?
Maybe
what is the process of going and looking for these vendors? I mean, is it just put it out on the school?
We posted to look at a few others on this project actually started a few years ago. We actually contacted Power School, contacted a few different places, and some of the bids were quite outrageous. They almost didn't even want to do it, but it was something that they could have done. But then when we put the bid out, it was not necessarily advertised to them that we were doing it, but it wasn't. And we told them we were going to do it originally, but I'm not sure. I didn't put the RFP out there, so I'm not sure.
I know we do solicitations, and if we don't get at least three, we definitely do solicitations. It's part of the process, but I'm not sure on this one. But
and I know before we did this process, I personally talked to some of the other companies.
So with the RFP, do you know if any other companies responded to the RFP? It must have been only these three, right? Unless any were excluded before it. Like this first one, you know, not meeting the minimum mandatory requirements, right? Brad, you could have you could seek clarification, or you could just automatically fail them for not meeting those from the very beginning, right? So I'm wondering if there are any others that you know of that maybe put in bids and maybe were automatically disqualified due to not answering the proposal.
I don't think there were any other bids as far as
these were the only three that were in the evaluation process. Yeah. So.
Are there any conflicts with vendor number three?
Let's look at that binder.
I don't know who it was. So.
Because Grace Charles and I, when we met with State Charters for the board today, that's still one of their biggest concerns. It's been the perception of the conflict of favoritism. So there's anything you can do.
So these are tech companies, local companies.
The name of their person, we can just say it out loud.
Design. Scheduling the college planning, but is it web based? Or is it app based?
Yeah.
There's their contact info page, maybe on there.
They're in New Jersey.
The New Jersey
Learning thing. Mate. I don't know if anyone's heard of them, but they're in New Jersey. I doubt there's a conflict.
That's the third one?
Yeah, that's vendor three.
And they scored.
They scored
well.
Fairly high, yeah.
Yeah, they scored the highest.
No,
the
second highest.
Oh, second highest, excuse me. Yeah.
I think with the two conflicts with vendor two, that with the microscope, probably wouldn't be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So would they have somebody on site working for us, or are they going to do it all remote?
I think they would do it remote. And this is something we wouldn't need on-site support. They're just building a software package for us.
They're supposed to meet once a week.
Oh, they'd meet, yeah, meet once a week, but I think it
probably on a Zoom meeting,
yeah. I would guess.
So Modern IT Solutions, is that their name, or is it Modern Tech Solutions?
Yeah, modern IT solutions.
I'll pull up a website for them.
Are they just...
ModernITconsulting.com? That's what... That's their email server.
And they're based out of your kind of job?
Yeah. It's 50,000 more.
How much is the grant?
Or it's like 600,000 something, but we're using it for other things too.
This, if you took the stance of you eliminated vendor one and vendor two from a standpoint of conflicts, could you go to vendor three and ask them for their last and final and see if that.
See if they could match the other price?
You are if they are you can actually do that from all three of them. You can go from all three and say it's your first. This is, could we get your last and final?
Okay.
But if you're getting it down to if you really eliminated everybody else and you're doing it to them, and just say there's nothing, no part of this restricts you from negotiating. I mean, you know, you want to do what you can get the best price for. But if you do eliminate those other two vendors and they're the only vendor, try to get a lower price, but I'm not saying we should eliminate one or two necessarily. That's just part of the discussion. But it's just.
I think after a day.
I think it'd go a long ways. I think it would. I think it would be a good investment in goodwill. That's just because this is a big contract, and if there's conflicts there, it's going to create.
One of the things you really want on this one is you're going to need somebody who's going to be working with your software to give you the authority, the flexibility to be able to. So, whatever we do with anybody, just make sure it's a company that'll work with us, allow us to have ownership of the software and flexibility to change it.
That is a problem with hours going.
Was that with vendor three? Was that an issue?
I don't think it was an issue with vendor three.
I wonder if we need to start again.
I was thinking the same thing.
Are we up against a deadline on this? Was there a
deadline? We'd like to get it implemented, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So, kids are farther and farther along.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this is not normal circumstances.
Yeah. I wonder if it would turn to solicit other offers and start again.
I wonder if it might be a shorter path, a timeline to reach back out to them, see if they can give us a little better price. And then you have less that you're trying to make up out of the budget somewhere else. If the grant covers everything, but we have other needs for the grant money, if you could get them to drop half of the difference between vendor three and vendor four, then that's less that you have to juggle in the rest of figuring out how to cover that out of the budget and dodge the conflict bullet.
We would also need to find out and see if they have a representative that would actually come into Utah, because we were saying they were based out of New Jersey.
New Jersey is what it says.
So that kind of worries me, because whenever you're dealing with software that you're building specific to a school, you do need somebody working right with you locally.
But a larger company is going to have more resources too, to react and change programs.
Were the questions and the qualifications, did they include everything that if you rewrote it, you would today? would you add things to it? Preston, you mentioned that they have to work with the school, let them have ownership of it. So it's like we're saying, you know, we don't want you to have it and be in contract forever. We want to be able to take it back from you, maybe. Was that a question in the RFP? If it wasn't, then it would be in the quick. It would be there now if you made if you knew the RFP. Is that important?
So
it's there.
Yeah, this is their answer.
We'll have creative control and ownership of all private identifiable information.
And their answer was said yes. Vanguard, the academy will have creative control and ownership of all private identifiable information for all students and users. Okay. So they answered yes.
I'd like suggestions of going at number three and seeing if they'll drop, and if not, then go through the new process.
That sounds like a good approach.
We were talking about going back to number three, seeing if what their last and final would be. You might even mention, negotiator. And I'd say, this is what our budget approved. This is what we got approved in our budget. How close can you get to that? Because you're our choice. We don't have to say that we eliminated the other two. You're our choice, and this is what we need you as close as you can to be it. See if they what they say. And if they don't, then we take it back out. Take it out to a new RFP. That's just my suggestion.
I think it's a great suggestion.
Brad on the committee, and Brad can talk to both companies.
I'd be happy to do that.
And then
I don't understand the process.
Let it fall through for the next 2 or 3 years and make sure we're comfortable.
I'm
totally good with that.
I'm out of here.
But I actually think you should, because like I said, things that I had with things like this, you should do it for companies that work with the state for a few years. That's flexibility.
I don't know. With the way that I actually want to, we start again and do it the right way.
We have no problem.
No conflicts. Have the one that's pulling the RFP together. Make sure they're completely independent, because that was one of the things that was focused on. That
That is the thing.
We're trying to correct.
Maybe that should be a question on the RFP.
Right? They're not going to know who.
Yeah, one of the things that was brought up was.
Yeah, that's true.
So whoever's submitting the RFP is going to know that they're submitting a bid as well. So there's a choice if they're in the conference.
Okay.
I think that would be a huge act of
that. So is this something we need to motion to restart the RFP process then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll entertain any motions that anyone has regarding this RFP. And maybe in the wording of the motion, we should say we'll go back and restart the RFP, rewrite it with knowing that there are conflicted companies that may rebid.
And I think we should also solicit for more.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't the state have some vendor, a vendor database, a pool that you can choose from? That might be
a good
start would be to go to their pool and grab some, send the RFP out to some people that are known good players that the state likes.
That's a great idea.
Scratch that.
Because they do have a preferred vendor list. And in fact,
the RFP out if they're on the preferred
vendor. Yeah, I was just going to say, I'd have to check because I can't remember for large contracts.
Oh, maybe not for
large. That's my question. It's the large contract.
$50,000
I think you still have to go out to RFP, but anything under 50,000, if it's an approved vendor, you don't even have to go out for an RFP.
Yeah.
But if it's a large contract, you still have to go out to an RFP. But if you use their sources, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think that'd go a long ways to help move the needle on the microscope work.
And I think we do actually need a lot of the state vendors, so.
Yeah.
Does anyone know what the deadline is on the grant?
On the grant? Oh, your grant. You can. I think you can do it all even in the next fiscal year. This is coming out of ESSER II. Pretty sure. It's coming out of ESSER II. It's you got till next fiscal year. Okay.
So, do we want to stick with that motion, or do we want to reword it to clarify?
So, do you want me to read what I have so far, and then you can clarify it. So. Scott motioned to restart the RFP process for the GPS software and solicit more bids. What do you want it to say?
Maybe add on there focusing on making sure that the state preferred vendors are given the information.
Given the opportunity to bid on.
Bid for solicit for the state.
Okay.
And then, Grace, you still second that motion?
Okay.
So we have the motion to restart the RFP process for the GPS software and solicit more bids, making sure the state-preferred vendors are getting the information. So Scott made the motion. Grace seconded. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Okay, so we will rebid this RFP. And I think we can call John and Charles back in the room. The next item is the classroom technology RFP. So I think John's got that information for us too.
What was the exact hold on time frame they said for getting that done?
So vendor 3 said they would be finished by June of 2023. Yeah. I think they all gave timelines. They were all fairly similar. Vendor 2 looks like was a couple months later, but I think they were all by the beginning of the school year after the 23-24 school year. So do we have information on the next, on the classroom technology RFP?
I realized what we were looking at, voting on was actually what we previously voted on the tech right stuff. The classroom technology, we're actually just not quite in ready to go out to the RFP, but preparing the information needed to generate the RFP.
Okay, so,
that
so
we're
not ready.
For a future meeting.
I was
is that just your IT support person?
The IT support has been preparing what's going to be needed to tie into the system.
Oh, okay.
So this is hardware for like video, online, more online learning. And
smart board. Smart
board.
Yeah, equip every single classroom. And so that we'll get that information assembled and be doing a whole complete RFP on that. Just see what is good on that.
Okay. So we'll hold off item number 7 until for a future meeting. The next item is the facility lease agreement, which is a voting item. And I found out that I'm actually conflicted with this one. so I'll need to recuse myself. I'm a cousin with two of the officers of the landlord, I guess. So.
And yeah, the officers. And myself and Scott.
Okay. So we need to turn it over to another board member to direct this discussion where the vice chair and the chair are both out. Does any, do any board members want to volunteer to head this discussion? You want to do it, Brad, since you're on the finance committee?
And then, sure, I don't know anything about it.
So your cousin with officers, what's your conflict interest?
I didn't know who they were either until...
I put it in the...
Minutes. So our conflict is, and one of the officers is my sister.
Okay.
One of the officers of the...
LLC.
The LLC board member.
They're a corporation.
They're a 501c3.
There they are. And that owns the building is a 501c3.
So you have a conflict with two officers?
Yeah, two officers are my cousins.
And your sublease?
They're a 501c3, yeah.
People that own the building are a 501c3. How do you...
It's the private school across the street.
They're in Deborah Hall's landlord.
They're leasing it from that school.
They own it in Deborah Hall also.
Part of the in Deborah Hall.
And who? No. What's the school?
Ensign Learning Center. We'll recuse ourselves and let Brad lead the discussion.
Eric says it's officers. Are you, is officer your sister?
Private school?
One of the officers.
Yeah, one of the officers.
He said two of them, though. For you, it's just one.
Who they associate? Why are they a private school? What are they specialized?
Just say they're associate.
Yeah.
My understanding is for a lot of the families.
How many square feet are in that?
74,361.
Say it one more time.
74,361.
This building is?
Yes. This amendment has been, it's actually been one of the issues that they've been, the State Charter Board has been pushing us to get back to them. Now, in fact, one thing. What I want to do is print out the original lease and all previous amendments so that the board can be
familiar with all with the history of the league. And I apologize, I should have had those printed out previously. Originally in 2015, when Vanguard was first formed, they originally signed the lease. It was actually a different entity at that time that owned the building. If you look here in the recitals, how those are printed, Joni, I wonder if I could get your help going and getting the printouts of the original lease, the first three amendments that are printed out on that map for the benefit. So back in December 29th, 2014, if you look at the recitals in this Fourth Amendment, it shows that the Vanguard entered into a lease with a company called Lakeview Office Building, LLC. And that was the original lease that was entered into. To begin with, it didn't include the entire part of the building. It didn't include all of the premises because there was still another tenant that was in part of the building. And then in April 27, 2015, there was an amendment that actually added the remaining square footage on the second floor of the building to our lease.
To take you up to the 60,000?
Yes. To get us up to 60,035. And that was the first amendment back in 2015. Now, in 2017, then there was a second amendment to the lease. The ownership of the lease of the property transferred from Lakeview Office Building LLC to Ensign Building Center. They actually purchased the property from the landlord.
So what was the previous landlord's name?
Lakeview Office Building LLC.
As it sits right now, without this amendment, when will the lease expire? If you don't sign this amendment,
July 31st, 2025. This amendment does not change
the term or the lease or the rate.
All this amendment does is changing the rate for the months of August and September of 2022.
And why?
And what happened? Again, going back to the history of the lease, in 2015, at the time that the ownership changed, they were redoing the lease in the new owner's name, and at that time, they had gotten notice that the other tenant would be using the building until August to July 31st of 2022, and then their lease was expired. So at the time, Suzanne Owen, the previous director, knew that at some point Vanguard would need the square footage. And so at that time, she negotiated to add that square footage to take effect when the other tenant was out. And so the other tenant originally planning on being out a little bit earlier in the year. And so Vanguard took responsibility and possession of that beginning August 1st of 2022.
what happened is the tenant that was there did not get moved out at the end of their lease. And there was a holdover on their lease, so they continued to move the building. And they actually wasn't out until around August 15th. At that time, I had come in as the new director, and I could see that the rent was increased, but it was and so I approached them with this amendment, which is actually the fourth amendment, and I'll explain the third amendment in just a little bit. The fourth amendment to negotiate reduction in keeping the rental rate for the at the lower square footage until October 1st. Out and in possession of this space and was able to start doing something. So that was the only purpose of this amendment.
So what rent was paid August and September? Was it the 71 or the 78? And or was it the higher rate and they owe us a rebate?
It was supposed to be the higher rate, and I thought the higher rate was paid.
Right.
And but we were going to be getting a rebate. I actually didn't learn until just today, when I was meeting with Jennifer Lambert, that it was reported the lower rate was paid. When I checked with John, the reason I didn't see the difference is because where he heard and understood I was renegotiating, and he on his own made the decision that he was going to
pay the lower
just pay the lower rate.
So we don't owe them and they don't owe us.
So as of right now, as I looked at it, I think they do still owe us a little bit because it appears to me he did pay the higher rates.
Mm-hmm. So this is a triple net, please.
Yeah, so I need to look at this. And so I need to look at that a little closer because my original understanding was they did, but I found that they didn't, that John didn't in fact pay the higher rate until they did.
Jennifer said, check the transparency website that shows that $81,000 was paid and to make sure that that's reconciled.
Correct, because it's not. It wasn't what was paid, it was the 71,000.
It was the 71,000. The reason I thought it was the 81,000 is because that same month, John added into the CAM to begin paying for the taxes. And so the actual check was almost exactly the same as what
because it had been
paid. And so I thought, I didn't look at his details, but I thought it was
is that something Jennifer wanted clarification?
Yeah, and so I'm gonna need to clarify that with her. That John, that the lease would have required us to pay the higher amount, and we probably should have. I didn't hear from the landlord, and he thought it was probably because at the time they got the payments, I was already in negotiations on this.
Why would Ensign buy the buildings and then just to turn around and lease them back to you? They didn't, because Lake, was Lakeview attached to Ensign? Were they an LLC that was part of Ensign? Or were they just an office building company? And then,
assuming that, the honest truth is, I have no idea.
So you don't know why Ensign bought it, even though you guys were a long-term tenant. Why do they want the buildings?
Ensign was in the building for a while, right? Ensign Learning Center was in that other side of the building, right?
No, that was Ameris.
Oh, that was a different one.
They were also leasing it.
They bought the building after Vanguard was a tenant with a lease until 2025. I don't understand. And I'm sure that may be part of the questions. It's like, it just seems weird why a private school would buy a building the lease back to a charter school. I will tell you, in my estimation, the rate is a market rate. It's not over, it's not under, it's a market rate.
I actually verified that myself.
Yeah, it's not a sweetheart deal, or it's not an overpayment deal for them to benefit. They may be benefiting because, you know, what interest rate, whatever, they may be making profit off the building, but that's okay, that's why you own a building. You don't do it.
And we're not the only school.
And how can
for them? So.
Now, I'm not going to worry about their tax problems, but 501c3, it's interesting, but that's not our problem. But you're saying that other than the lease on this lease, that Ensign Learning Center owns the building and is our landlord, other than that, there are no other connections or business dealings or any kind of things between.
That's correct.
The only other thing that had come up is actually in the probation letter, and in the closed session, you guys may discuss that, is there was a request from Ensign Learning Center to have some testing done. It's here on their sixth grader.
Mm-hmm.
They were coming, they were graduating.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually went to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And asked if the testing could be done at Vanguard or some other facility. And the state charter board actually directed them that yes, it could be done. Even we were contacted by the state, not even by Ensign, and says we'd like to do this testing there. You guys can't allow this, and here's how you do it. And actually walk us through the process to show how to set up the kids in the system.
But then you said as part of the probation, they brought that up?
They asked for all the information relating to that. And
you know, they directed it
that way. Because I think they were making sure that Ensign Learning Center was paying Vanguard for the testing. And that's what came up, is they asked for all the information regarding to the payments for the testing.
Just for clarification, was it the state charter school board you said that?
Actually, it was the USB.
Probably the USB.
USB.
I was going to say the charter school board
assessment. It was USB assessment.
Okay.
Again, it was. I'm trying to give information that was before my time that I was there, but just what I've been told since working for the probation, the information that I've had.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the Third Amendment to this is, the reason this is the Fourth Amendment is because for the Third Amendment, in 2021, when Stuart O'Colbia was doing his audit for the state charter board, he reviewed the lease. And he raised the issue that the lease was signed by the director, Suzanne Owen. And he says this should be being signed by the chairman of the board.
So you just redid the lease. You just redid it.
The Third Amendment is simply redoing the signature.
Essentially what this amendment is doing is just memorializing what's already happened.
Yeah.
And that you have some accounting to do to straighten out the CAM charges, common area maintenance charges, but other than that, it's
sure
memorializing what you're already doing. Yeah. And this doesn't make or change if they have an issue with the landlord one way or the other. It's just you took more space.
This one was the
and the previous one had already taken more space.
Well, that
this does the former board chair.
Kent Johnson. That was the Third Amendment. Part of the reason why I wanted to present this, Dave Mortensen asked us to show all of the amendments. As we've been going back through, we have not been able to find a record of where the board back in 2014, 2015 actually reviewed and approved
the original
lease. The state charter board has raised an issue and question on that. As I went and looked back, I couldn't find it. Looked to me like the law changed. I couldn't tell if it was 2015 or just right about that time when the law first changed that you had to submit to the charter board. And so.
No, that's been back there about 12 or 13.
Yeah.
But so, seriously, what are they don't have, do they know how to read a lease?
Yeah, and so when we submitted this amendment, we did submit all of the amendments, so the State Charter Board had everything to review. And so...
So the State Charter Board is asking the board now to ratify the original lease?
They are not.
Okay.
But Dave Mortensen is asking the board to at least document that the board has reviewed it. To vote to approve, and what we're voting to approve is this Fourth Amendment to be submitted to the State Charter Board for review, for their 14-day review process. I don't know that they're, we just wanted to show and make the board aware of the status of the lease. I don't know that there's anything to vote on because the lease is executed. There's nothing that could be done.
So it just needs to be noted in our board meeting notes that we have been given a copy of the lease to review.
Do we
want a motion to approve to submit the Fourth Amendment to the lease to the State Charter Board to make it clean?
So the Fourth Amendment hasn't been submitted.
It originally was, but not this version. They came back with some stuff. And so we stepped back. We can't execute it, but the attorneys would like the board's approval, because in order to submit it to the State Charter Board, I have to put in there that on this date, the board has reviewed and approved this in order to submit it to the State Charter Board.
So the wording I have is, motion, we're looking for a motion to approve to submit the Fourth Amendment to the lease to the State Charter Board. Is that right?
I would make that motion that we submit the Fourth Amendment to the lease to the State Charter Board with the change of the board chair. Right now it states Kent Johnson as the board chair.
Okay. I've noted that change. Any seconds?
A second.
Did you get a second?
Yeah. And I guess Brad was leading it, so you can do the roll, the vote.
Oh.
Ask for votes.
Well, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
Okay, so we will make that, correct the name, make the board chair on that, and we will get it uploaded to the State Charter Board tomorrow for their review. With that, let me ask the board chair to return. Actually, this month going to be, I should have had that in my director's report, but this month we're going to be sending out notices and advertising, putting up a sign and advertise.
But your current wait list or current enrollment list is expended and you're ready to start again?
Yes.
So right now you don't have people on the wait list. If you had a student walk out the door today, you don't have a wait list of someone that could come in and take his place.
Right now we are over enrolled from what we approved, but next year we actually are approved to increase one more year. Our current enroll is actually 530. Mm-hmm. We have done a little over that, 530.
I think they give 3%.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they give us up 3%. Next year we're approved to go up to 550. So we are going to advertise, which I expect we will get full enrollment next year. We're starting to advertise, do that advertisement, and we're going to try to get people applying this month, and then hopefully we'll begin January 1st.
All right, so I think we're ready to go into the policy update, the next item on the agenda. So we've got a number of policies here that we need to review. And I think we should probably vote on each of these policies individually. Okay. So maybe we'll start with the cash policy. That's the top one on my pile. Does anyone else need copies of this?
Yeah, there are more piles.
So just to clarify, I think is the green text the new text from the current from a previous policy?
Yes.
And then the just the red strikeout is what we're deleting?
Yes. Let me actually defer to Michael. Michael is the one that prepared all of these, so when he gets back, I'll have the next week.
You know, because there's a requirement for all funds to be deposited within 3 days of receipt, is that in this policy?
When I reviewed it, I believe it was.
It says daily.
It should be in there.
No later than 3 days. Some page, second page 13.
Yep.
As required by here.
Of course. Yeah.
Everybody knows that. Deposit policy where all deposits are countersigned, checked and rechecked. Is that in the new one?
Number five. The form shall be signed by a minimum of 2 signers, counter,
there
counter,
we go.
Counter.
I should try reading. It's a lot easier than you guys. Entertain any discussion or motions on this policy when everyone's ready.
I was going to wait till Charles came back, but I'm curious on number 10. All funds should be kept in secure location with limited access. So who checks that? Who's responsible to make sure that's being done? Or even there are 2 signatures, it's just the policy fails.
Do you have a safe?
Michael says we do.
I'm actually not sure.
Oh, okay. I thought you said. I think Charles knows.
But
I don't know.
Typically you would put it in a safe. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there probably is one. But then we don't. I don't know if there you take much cash, right? So at a typical high school, you have athletics and all that, so you got a lot of cash coming in. But I don't know if there's that much cash coming in.
Is there a safe where the funds are kept securely?
Yes, there is. There's a locked desk that locks up, and locks everything off, a cabinet.
behind Evelyn and Lee's desk. And everything gets locked up in.
And who has access to that?
Evelyn is the only one that has access to
it. Is she the designated cashier?
Yes, she is.
How much cash is going through there?
Do you guys have dances or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
So probably like less than $500 a month, maybe. Not even that.
Probably not even that. It gets a little more. There's the way our program is, our funding covers the lunch for everyone because we have so many qualified. And so
yearbooks.
We don't collect money. The main thing is like, yeah, at the time when yearbooks are ordered and stuff, yeah, is when the lock comes on in. There's other optional fees if any of the students want to purchase uniform clothing or jackets or something like that from the school. It's not a lot.
This covers the requirements as I know.
So, can we motion to approve each one?
Yeah, we're open for motion. Any more discussion on this cash policy?
I motion to approve 15.2 cash policy.
So we have a motion from Scott to approve the cash policy 15.2 and a second from Darren. So all in favor of approving policy 15.2, cash policy, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Yes, that's unanimous. The cash policy is approved. Next, we will look at the tuition reimbursement as compensation policy 11.11.
This is a policy that the board actually reviewed in the previous meeting, and there was one change that was requested, and that's the green text at the top of there. Other than that, this is the policy that the board previously reviewed, so this is just making the change that was requested by the board this back in the October meeting.
So we'll open the floor for any discussion or motions on this one as well.
I second.
Okay, so we have a motion from Scott to approve and a second from Dan. So all in favor of approving policy 11.11, tuition reimbursement as compensation, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Okay, so the tuition reimbursement as compensation policy is approved. Next, we'll look at the conflict of interest policy 15.3. And at any point, there's discussion, and you can open it up for that.
This was we've had this policy for a while, with the exception of the yellow text added. But I could not find a record that it was ever reviewed and approved by the board historically. And because of all the questions and issues in the probation, we asked Michael to go through it and update and review and improve the policy, and he was able to provide that information for stuff from his experience with some academy and other places and kind of update the policy for us. It was reviewed by the executive committee before bringing it to here with the changes, and they did recommend that it be brought to the board for approval.
So do you have any questions about any of the yellow?
sourced it from five or six different content protection policies. Summit Academy, George Washington Academy, Providence Hall,
Freedom?
Oh, Freedom Crowd.
Why
use that one? Same categories. They all had the yellow was all very similar in language back to Starbucks. The yellow highlighted was the added stuff in the other stuff.
Correct. I'm curious though. On 15.3.5 procedures, you talked about conflicts. If a board member is related to another board member or staff member by blood, married or domestic partnership. I'm wondering, I'm sure there's a definition of the other conflicts you guys talked about last time in the last meeting. I wasn't quite sure. How many generations are you talking about?
Yeah, I remember she talked about that in the training. I think she said cousins through. Cousins, right? I think cousins, right? It was a first cousin. Yeah. First cousin. Yeah. Specific.
Yeah,
it's not
specific.
But
stepkids
and I think children-in-laws or parents-in-law.
So if I read this, how do I know according to this procedure?
The code states what, the code says, I think it's Utah code that says what a relationship is, and it's parent, grandparent, nephew, niece, aunt, uncle, first cousin, okay. Brother, sister, so and brother-in-law, sister-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And we reference that in here. That law.
I believe it's referenced in the front of the law.
Right. Okay. All right, sorry. Yeah, I see.
I'm gonna check to make sure.
I know some, my great-great-great-great-grandfather came over on the Mayflower, so
yeah.
There's quite a few people on the road.
We're all related.
Yeah. Right.
Say so. A lot of these updates were part of the result of the training that we got.
If anyone has any more discussion, we're open for that, or if anyone has wants to make a motion, we'll entertain those also.
I'll motion to accept the conflict of interest policy.
I second.
Okay, so we had a motion from Brad to approve the conflict of interest policy, and a second from Ben. All in favor to approve 15.3 conflict of interest policy, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. So that's unanimous. Conflict of interest policy is approved. Next, in my stack is the library content program, policy 3.7. And is this a completely new policy?
It is. This is a policy that is required by the state to update and include some new information.
Okay.
And so we drafted this to make the requirements and comply with the updated requirements of the legislature's information regarding library content. Vanguard doesn't have a library, an actual library itself, but the law that the state Congress passed actually includes any library material that might be on classroom shelves as well.
I think this was reviewed by the executive committee as well.
Yes.
I
who is the curriculum director?
Myself.
If you actually had a full library, how would you have a record of reviewed materials? Yeah, you could have somebody review and read these 5,000 books.
Because that's what I can see is the new regulation is going to require all of us schools to start keeping some very extensive records of that stuff. I can only imagine the schools that have a full library with what they have.
That was a deterrent in a way, right? It's not that one.
I thought it was required, but
I think digital.
Yeah, that's true. So we do every book in the digital library.
Absolutely, right.
Every book on the internet.
This is required from the state.
What's
that? This is required from the state.
It's my understanding it was triggered by a lawsuit that took place where there were some parents, students, and I'm not sure if it was Davis School District or which school district it was, but it was a lawsuit that took place over content. Whether content should be allowed in a library until the legislature put it on them to address the results of the litigation.
Once we go against smaller society, it's just
subversive.
What? I don't recommend that for somebody to read.
That's subversive. I never read it.
So we have a motion from Scott to approve this policy and a second from Debbie. So all in favor of approving policy 3.7 library content program, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. And so the library content program policy is approved. Next is the procurement policy 15.10.
Of the probation, we went through the review process on this policy and made some updates to just include the state law references and make things more clear.
Yeah, I'd say that was the biggest change, was just the new state law reference in the federal department there. That just keeps that aligned with those laws that are already there. Apart from that, there was a slight change at the very end with the avoidance of those bid splitting. Policy, I reviewed the entire policy, so I did a similar thing with the conflict of interest policy. I gathered many from charter schools and looked at the language, and the language you guys had in there was very similar to what other policies were out there, and so there wasn't a whole lot of change beyond adding those federal and state reference.
Yeah.
The numbers on the authorization requirements, are those now what the current state code is, or is it 5,000 that has to have community approval? I know it has to have documentation and bids, but is it a state requirement? Do you have to have finance committee approval?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the law is actually at 50,000. But our policy, because of the issues that concern the state charter board,
and an effort to policy, right? I just wanted to go
an effort to try to provide assurances before any perceived conflicts.
Yep.
Gotcha.
That's pretty generous, I think, because often you make purchases over 5,000. I mean, as a director from school, I did that a lot. And so I think that's a good sign of good faith.
So that meets this requirement that says the Vanguard Tiger Board of Directors has authority to establish the kid policies that are more restrictive than state laws, of course. Are there other ones in here like that?
Let's look.
I believe that's the only one. It's more restrictive.
Yeah, I think so too. Purchases over 50,000, that depends on the purchase. If it's a small purchase, it depends on professional services. So I think that's the only one. Is the other one not? The other one's not actually.
State law that on exemptions from competitive bid, sole source, service contracts for professionals, but also what about approved providers within your state contracts, like RISCA and those kind of things. I don't know if we need to mention it in policy, but is that anywhere else?
It's definitely not on the policy, but I think that would be, that would be an option. I don't know if it's, I think whenever I would look at a procurement, that would be an option, but it didn't necessarily mean I took that option.
No,
right?
In fact, oft times.
Yeah, sometimes you don't,
they're
right?
Much higher.
Yeah. So, but I think it's definitely best practice to explore, every available.
Yeah. I don't know, that needs to be mentioned because they could change that policy and then your policy would be out there.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll entertain motions to approve this policy unless there's further discussion.
I'm motion to.
Motion to accept. Do we have a second?
I second.
So the motion from Ben to approve the procurement policy 15.10 and a second from Dan. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say no. So the procurement policy has been approved. The next policy, and I think this is the last one, is the fundraising, donations, gifts, and sponsorships policy 8.3.
Was updated pursuant to a recommendation from Brad Wilkins. This is from reviewing some of the policies. That was our reason for going through and making it.
Some of the changes you'll notice is the different types of fundraisers are more defined. depending on what type of fundraiser you would do, there's different laws that could govern how the money is used or spent or collected. And so it was important to define each one of those out so that when the money comes in for that fundraising activity, it's also accounted for and expended in the right way.
I might mention too, this was reviewed by the executive committee. There is one change that you guys mentioned, requested, referenced an additional policy for some of these actions. It's in let's see, 8.3.5-4. It looks like our numbering might be off.
That's on page 4.
On page 4. Item, it's the second item 1. It should be item 2. But in the paragraph in the first part, the policy that was intended in there was actually an insurance policy, not creating a extra policy about kind of that. Any activities may be outside of the existing insurance policy and may require supplemental insurance if they're going to do anything like that. And so we added the word insurance in there to clarify the intended what kind of policy.
8.351 approval on the second page seems a little excessive for to have a board of directors approve a fundraising thing. If a class wants to sell candy bars or whatever is permitted, it seemed like it would need to come to board of directors. Wouldn't that be something that would be a director level decision? It seems a little overkill to take a fundraising, regardless of its nature, to the board of directors.
That's a really good question.
I need to look at that again. It seems like our charter, there's something in our charter about the board of directors. But it's been a while since I looked at that.
Is there a lot of fundraisers?
We don't do a lot of fundraisers.
Usually it's no trouble this way.
Yeah.
Can you strike that bridge sort of directly to the administration?
I would think so, unless Charles thinks that there's language within the charter that predicts that says something about that.
Pull it up.
I'd be surprised. But
I can verify it right now. Right.
Seeing student participation. Is it covered in some other policy about those with fee waivers, that you can't use fundraisers to
only
steer fee? Is it something there? Because I know that there's something within the rules that you can't use fundraisers.
Cover student fees,
yeah, this means from the, cannot be used to cover the cost of waiting for the down.
So a lot of this policy came from the Summit Academy policy, and we recently went through with, we were audited by school fees at USB. And so a lot of the language in there in the code is what they were looking for from that particular LEA. It's not to say that that's what they'd be looking for from this LEA, but the language would probably be similar in the processes and whatnot. So I feel really good about what's in here in terms of the revision process. I feel good that it would be in line with what school fees and USBE would be comfortable with.
So are there enough suggested changes that we want to rewrite this policy and bring it back to the board, or do we want a motion to?
I can't find anything in the charter that would require a fundraiser to come to the board. Probably actually
you can't find anybody else to the I would propose that we accept the fundraising donation gifts and sponsorship policy subject to the change of in 8.3.5.1 approval that would be approved by the administration.
I second that motion.
So we have a motion from Brad to approve this policy with the one change in 8.3.5. And it'll be approved by the Vanguard administration rather than the Vanguard board of directors. And then we had a second from Grace. So all in favor of that, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Okay, so that policy is approved pending that one small change. So that is the last of our policy items. So next on the agenda is human resource items and review of conflict of interest statements.
The main thing we wanted to do with the approval of the conflict of interest policy, it includes a conflict of interest disclosure form that is actually annually required to be updated for each board member. Typically, I think that's been done in January. We're also required to get that when new board members come on. And we actually have quite a few new board members that have come on since January that we haven't given that form to fill out. So I don't have any other human resource issues, but we wanted to go ahead and get this conflict disclosure form because the State Charter Board has asked for them. All the board members, and so we have to make sure we're doing that. There should have been a blank one passed out to each. Now, for some of the board members, there's this previous form that was done as far as relationships. And I imagine this is just the attach that to this. I think the thing that this also asks for is in a conflict of interest with companies and vendors to read the policy. There's something with our vendors that we don't have to get a conflict of interest. This allows that to start.
One thing we added to the policy too was board members that are conflicted with other board members, and I don't think that was in the policy before. So
that's also not
got that on the back though.
So I think the requirement for that is just to turn that into the director to be filed, right?
Yes.
So.
if anyone needs to take a little more time and then get it turned in, I think that's fine.
Okay, so is there any more discussion on this item? If not, we'll move on to the next item, which is a possible closed session. Is there a need for a closed session tonight?
So there is a need for a closed session to update our board members, our new board members on any of the things and where we're at on the new status. Let's hold on that one. So to do that, I would like to call the attorney first, get him on the phone, and then vote to go into closed session.
Okay.
We have to do that by a...
By a member?
Member vote.
Okay.
And then have everybody that's not on the board exit the room, and then open the closed session on a different recorder. So
okay.
You have to stop and record it, and then on a different recording.
Right.
Okay.
Hi, Dan. I've got you in the board meeting. Good, I'm doing well. I've got you in the board meeting with all of our board members. We're just getting ready to go into closed session, so I wanted to get you on the line.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well.
I wanted for you to go on, so.
Can I hear you now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
My office hasn't been a whole lot better. We might
We might need to do through computer, Grace. Phones here have not been working.
Yeah, I think I'm okay. So, have you got a good connection?
I can hear you okay. Maybe I should call you back. Let me try to call you back.
If we need to do it via Zoom.
Zoom is going to work better. There's been a problem with the phones.
I have a Zoom account, but I need Wi-Fi access. I can run it to my phone.
Our tech guys aren't here.
I was wondering if the Zoom call would work out better.
I can hear you good now, but I can hear my Zoom too if that didn't work.
Zoom. It will
keep
cutting.
If it's a better connection, then yeah.
Then you can record it.
I don't have a Zoom link, but I can.
We can check on the internet.
Yeah, how do I even see it?
Debbie has a Zoom.
Yeah, we will in a minute. I've got to get connected on the internet to my computer and then. Are you seeing this yet?
Sure.
Yeah, I've got mine right here.
I just don't know.
The tech guys have to be here. Yeah.
I don't know.
None of us know.
No.
The tech guys are the only ones who have.
Yeah.
It's really true.
Separation of powers.
I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Since the flood.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We set the table.
Yeah, we've got that landline.
Do you have a landline? I got it. I got it.
Probably don't want a recording of that with the Zoom.
Okay, if you click copy the information and email it to me or text it to him, and then click, and then after set up the server.
Hear you. Can you hear me okay? Okay, we do have, I assume we just sent to you now as well.
That might turn on the volume.
To your email, yeah. That might be a little bit.
Just get your model. That's right. Yeah.
Is that how you spell her name? Or is it IE?
D-U-N-U-I.
Okay. Okay, do we want to start the motion to go into closed session now or entertain that?
So, Dave, we're going to start the motion to go into closed session now, and then we'll let you start.
Yeah. Great, let's make sure you do a motion in a second and then a roll call vote.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I motion to go into closed session.
For what purpose?
To discuss the pending litigation.
So we have a motion from Grace to go into a closed session for pending litigation. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, so we have a second from Kim. So now we'll do a roll call vote by all the board members. We'll start with Ben.
Ben Robinson, board member.
And then just say yes or no.
Yes.
Dan Jessup, board member, yes.
Kim Mangum, board member, yes.
Brad Nelson, board member, yes.
Aaron Jenkins, board member, yes.
Scott Houston, vice chair, yes.
Bryce Mitchell, Board Treasurer, yes.
And Eric Freeman, Board Chair, yes. So the voting is unanimous. We'll go into closed session now, so any non-board members will need to leave the room.